right. Welcome to the Terry and Gary's Low Expectations Podcast 433 version. We had a little technical difficulties trying a new service out. So here we go. Our guest today is Eugene Clark, Big Daddy. Eugene Clark, how you doing?
I'm doing great now that I'm doing great. How you doing, baby?
I'm doing great.
Tell us how you really feel with the technical difficulties and how you want to use some bad language towards Gary, not towards
me.
Man,
I want to cuss so bad toward technology. I'm telling you, this stuff, it's all good, but I'm not going to go there.
Hey, right. But hey, we got you. We got you connected. And normally I'm the person that's late. So, and I'm in the same boat as you. You know, technology and I don't mix. So Gary's the tech guy. And thank God we have Dave from Detroit Podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We wouldn't be on at all if it wasn't for Dave.
Right. The connector. That's his superhero name.
What's your superhero name, Big Daddy?
Man, I don't have one.
You don't have Big Daddy, that's it.
Big Daddy is the name. That's it. Big Daddy. Thank you, Gary. Big Daddy.
We don't need, hey, that works right there. And you don't know this, but I have a boatyard named Big Daddy's Boatyard, and it was named after you, Kevin Nash, and Big Daddy Don Garlitz. And don't
All right.
No royalties.
Oh, no, that's royalties. All right. Listen, that name goes around. My grandfather was called Big Daddy. I was called Big Daddy at UCLA. So
nice. So you're named after your grandfather.
You were all conference football, offensive guard in UCLA.
Offensive guard. Yes.
So, did you play football through high school, and that was just one of the first things you really fell in love with, or?
Actually, I didn't fall in love with it at all.
No.
Really?
I grew up I grew up in Tampa, Florida, and in the South, you play ball. And in elementary school, I was going to be the Prince and Cinderella. And I had to waltz with the gym teacher. And the guys didn't like that. You know, they called me those names, you know, punk, sissy, all that kind of stuff, because I'm in theater. So it was chasing me home, you know, trying to beat me up, all that kind of stuff. So finally, about, seven years old, 8 years old, start Pop Warner football. So I stopped playing football in order not to have to fight. These guys would chase me home. My mom was like 5'11", 230, and they couldn't be home. So if someone chased you home and you came in crying, she'd whip your butt, send you back out there. So they chased me home, and I'm going, Mama, Mama. And she stands on the back porch with her hands on the hips. And I'm thinking, I turned around, man, I threw people over the fence. I kicked about six guys' butt. And then from that point on, they left me alone. And then I thought, okay, you know what? I better play football because, you know, I'm not going to do this every day.
Right.
True story.
Nice. You know, so basically from getting chased home, you decided to play football to avoid all this stuff. And it led you to college and all that stuff. So that's a good story.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. See, Gary usually chases me home. Takes my lunch money. See,
there was a guy who used to do that. I won't say his name. He would punch me in the chest and take my lunch money. And I remember I came home from UCLA, you know, I was like at that time, I don't know, 6'3", maybe 270. And I saw him, Ronnie Phelps, and I saw him. And he was this little short dude. And he saw me. I said, Ronnie. He was like, no, man. Come on, bro. That was a long time ago. Come on, baby. Come on, now. I started laughing. I went, all right.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, see, Gary, when I grow up and be big and strong, I'm going to come after you and get my...
I don't know if you'll get 6'3", 270.
Right. Now, when you went to UCLA, was it a different... was it kind of like a shock to you growing up in Florida, going out to UCLA? Or?
Well, actually, no. I'm an Army brat. So I left when my stepfather married my mom. I left Florida about age 9 and a half, went to Japan, played football up in Japan. Then from Japan, we went to California, played football there. So, by that time, I'd been in California from 65 on. So, it wasn't a shock by then.
Now, how did you like Japan, and how long were you there for?
I was there for 2.5 years. I loved Japan. Yeah. It was great. Yeah. It was great. Because kids then could explore.
Yeah.
You know, when mom and dad are working, we would just go all over the place.
Right.
You know, spoke a little Japanese at the time, the wrong words. But, I loved it. Well, you teach you the bad words.
You know. Right. You learn the bad words first.
So oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We would learn the bad Italian words, and my grandma would wash our mouth. So we were trying to play dumb, like, I didn't know that was a bad word.
Right.
So you got drafted by the NFL too, correct? Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah. I was drafted by the Steelers, ninth round. Yeah, actually, you know what? I think that was sort of the beginning of the work I used as a zombie, because I was dating this lady for about young lady in school for about 4 years, and we broke up just around graduation. And for anyone who's gone through, you know, deep heartbreak, so I went to camp instead of 280, I went to camp at 216 pounds.
218
as a guard. And I remember watching Ernie Holmes. He was on, I think, the Wide World of Sports. They had Ernie Holmes was their defensive tackle. Yeah. And he comes out of the water, this big monster of a man. And I used to think, okay, all right. I could block back then. We played the wishbone. Mark Harmon was my quarterback, and we played the wishbone. And at 218, first they said it was only going to be the rookies – versus the rookies. It was fine. Because in my mind, I was still 280, 290, 300 pounds. I did really well. All of a sudden, they said rookies versus some of the vets. And the first guy they put me up against was a linebacker named Bradley. And I used to do this thing. If you ever see any of the old game, I do my neck like this, you know, like a bull. And I hit him in the chest, drove him back, drove him to the left, hit the cameraman. The cameraman went up in the air. Everybody was going, ooh, ooh. I sit in the bag. I'm going, okay, cool, because they think I'm skinny. And all of a sudden, they said, Clark, Ernie Holmes. Now, I've seen Ernie Holmes take John Cobb, and John Cobb was built like a Greek god. I saw him take John Cobb, shake him like a dog, and throw him off. So at first, my head started doing this stuff, and I was going to just drive him. But then for self-preservation, I drove and stuck him in the chest. I just relaxed. He threw me aside. He said, way to go, Rook. That was smart.
So you played smart. That's good to hear. So.
Yeah. And they would, like, Jack Lambert, he had quite a mouth to him at the time. He was one of their fiercest linebackers. They won the Super Bowl maybe twice. And they come in and be nice to you. And then the next play, knock you on your ass.
Yeah.
And I inadvertently clipped a guy named, I think it was Green. LC Greenwood, I think.
Oh, LC Greenwood.
No. Mean Joe was cool. Mean Joe was the coolest cat. And LC got upset and wanted to act like he wanted to fight. By that time, I had it. And I said, let's go.
Yeah.
216, me and these monsters. And Ernie Holmes put his hands around my shoulder and said, come here, Rug. If you fight him, you got to fight him and him and him and him. And I smiled. I said, you got a point.
Now, seeing that you guys were all on the same team, and now as far as when rookies come in, now did the vets kind of take the rookies under the wing? Did they just, you know, ignore them?
No, I never made the team. I was just trying out for the team.
Oh, okay.
So the vets basically, just like I would when I played up in the CFL, when you come on the team, we try to destroy you.
Okay. And is that kind of like to break you down to see if see how your attitude is, or?
Well, the drills for the Steelers were very intense. Mm-hmm. So, it was just extremely hard. But at 218, I hurt my shoulder, and that's the first time I used to block with my chest, and at 280, 290, 300. I could drive you off the ball, anybody, about 3 or 4 yards. But at Pittsburgh, they taught us to hit with our head and our, like, 3 points, like this.
Yeah.
Which I never liked at all. Right. But so when I hurt my shoulder and I asked the trainer, I said, I want to get back out there. He said, man, just tell them when they come in, just tell them, you just tell them your shoulder still hurts. Forget it. You'll never make this team. Not at 216. So I went, all right. Cause at that time I was still trying to find my girlfriend from the breakup. She was doing ballet somewhere. I was calling her in between practices, you know.
Right.
So from there I went to the CFL came down to sign me, but I went on tour with Bob Dylan for the Rolling Thunder Review Tour. I went on tour doing executive bodyguard work. Sorry. Peer group security for them, which was amazing. In fact, they got a book out. His best buddy, Louis Kemp, has a book called Bob Dylan and Me. And I was reading it, and I kept flashing back everywhere we went. So after the tour, then I went up to the CFL to play.
Yeah. Now, how long you just did that one tour security, or?
I did the one tour. Well, all through university, they would hire. It was called, can't think of the name, Special Event Services. I forget the name. They would hire ball players, wrestlers, you know, athletes to do the security. And I did that tour, I think. That was the only major tour I did, but I used to work for almost every major group that come through Southern California. We would do security for.
Yeah.
Now, were you acting already by the time you were in college?
No, I acted in school. I mean, I was in the Mikado, Miyu-sama, da 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 da. And when I got to use, and they told me, Coach Dick Vermeil recruited me, and he said, "You can come up to UCLA. You can still act, you can still sing." When I got to UCLA, they said, Coach Protho said, "You're here to play football, and that's it." So,
got it.
So it was after.
Yeah.
After.
Now, so basically, that seems like your first passion, acting and in theater and stuff.
Theater, acting, music, that has always been my first passion.
Oh, okay. Now, what led you to that? When you were a young age, it seems like you.
My grandfather was a preacher, and okay. I think he could earn 25 cents or 50 cents, which bought a lot back then in the early 50s. Whoever memorized the scripture, and I would memorize them every week. I got to the point where I could no longer compete, and we do little plays and stuff. So and all through grade school, so I fell in love with it. My mom. She said, "You can't make a living doing that. Get a real job." So, of course, I had to, you know, get my degree. But I always loved it.
Yeah.
From a little kid.
Yeah. Now, what did you take in school as far as a degree and stuff like that?
I was a psych major.
Okay.
And a sociology minor.
Oh, okay. So you can help Gary and I out.
There's no help in this.
Yeah, really. There's no help.
Yeah, you got to. You have to see a real professional.
I think we would challenge third degree too.
So, what was your first role then? The first acting role? I see you have like 134 credits on IMDb. So,
well, my very first acting role was it was Most Wanted. Well, the very first SAG acting role was Most Wanted. My very first role was Rinaldo and Claire. They shot a movie on the Bob Dylan tour. And I played opposite Joan Baez, but unbeknownst to me, when they gave me a contract, you know, sort of a waiver, I didn't have an agent at the time, but I was thinking, sign that for free. And I waited too long, and they said, okay, don't worry about it. And so I got completely cut out of the movie, which was reading the book. I'm thinking, you dummy, you should have signed it. Actually, and Joan Baez on tour, she heard me singing, and she wanted me to come on stage, and I think it was Waterbury, Connecticut, come on stage and sing Amazing Grace with her. And I'm like, you know what? I'm only here to do security. I don't think Barry Emhoff will like that. Again, I'm sitting there going, you idiot.
Right.
So what was your question again? So the first one was Most Wanted, and it was I played a football player, and that was my first acting job. Yeah, that was the very first one.
No. We were in Kung Fu as well.
You know what? That's one I really don't even remember. They said I was in it, but I don't remember that one. But I was in
like Kung Fu. That's pretty cool.
If I was, it was a bit part. But the most notable was Night Heat that ran for 5 years, 96 episodes. That ran CBS Shatner? Late Night.
Was that William Shatner's show or some kind of, was his name tied to that?
No. That was Sonny Grosso, who's the executive producer.
Okay.
No, that was from CBS Late Night. William Shatner was Tech War.
Tech War, okay, yep.
Yeah, Tech War.
Now, when you film consecutive like shows like that, is it better so you can kind of like get cemented in, or do you like doing the bit parts here and here?
Well, I don't like doing bit parts. I don't like doing bit parts at all.
Uh-huh.
But if you mean the odd singular job,
right?
I like series work, because when you work in the series, your mind, I mean, just like, you know, you're an athlete. When you were wrestling, when you got in great shape, you know, things work better. So
right.
In a series, your mind just sort of, it gets stronger, more powerful, works faster. So sometimes you're sitting in the makeup chair and they'll say, scene 11, we've completely rewritten it. Here's 3 pages. And you guys are first up. And you can look at it, or at least I could look at it, read it, say it back a few times, get on set, and we could do it. And that's what series worked.
Okay. Yeah, because you learn the character and stuff like that, and you become the character more, and you know how the character would think.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, right.
How did the Big Daddy come about then? How did the Land of the Dead come through?
Land of the Dead. One thing I do want to say, I played Mufasa in The Lion King too. That was musical. I got to sing. And I got to use my real voice.
Oh,
this
nice.
Is my real voice. This is my real voice. Simba. Hello, how are you? But that voice got me in a lot of trouble as a kid.
All right.
Man, hello, how are you? My name's Eugene Clark. Nice to meet you. Why do you talk like that? Excuse me, talk like what? Like that. So I met my real father when I was just still graduating from UCLA, and he sat across from me, and he was like, hello, son, how are you? And I'm like, you know, I got in trouble because of you all these years. So all through school, I learned to talk like this. And so how I got, to answer your question, there was an audition, and there were maybe 200 or 300 guys there. Mostly white guys, actually. But guys were coming out complaining. This is acting 101. What is this mess? I go in and George is there, plus an executive producer. And George says, you're dead. You're coming back to life. Go. That was it.
That was it.
So there was, that was all he said. So you had to make it up. So I had read the script. I was sitting in an office chair. There was a small desk with an office telephone. And I just sat there looking at him. And after a while, he said, are you okay? And I nodded. Now, I was trying to decide how bad did I want that job? Because I'm a bit of a germaphobe. And guys have been touching that phone. So I thought, I think I want this job pretty bad. So I took the phone with me and I sat on the floor with my back against the wall. And I laid my head on the phone like a pillow and curled up in the fetal position and went to sleep. I felt like I went to sleep for about maybe 30 seconds. Then I woke up and just like Bambi, you know, the cartoon, the Flintstones, I picked up the phone. I started beating the phone like, you know, like a kid, bam, 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 bam. I didn't say anything. I started doing that. Then I looked at the phone. I started licking the phone like kids put everything in their mouth. So yeah. I went from an infant and into a full rage, standing up with the chair over my head. With, oh, that's dogs upstairs. I won't do it. They'll go crazy. Just in a complete rage. And George, about 6'5", 6'6", he stood up, put his hand over his chest, and he went, you got me. And that's how I got the part.
Nice. Nice. Now that just came to you just like that.
Well, the backstory to that is, unbeknownst to me, I was in LA for the pilot season. I got this letter to go to court for divorce. After 26 years, wasn't expecting that. And so when I was sitting in that chair, I was numb. just, yeah. You know, anyone who's gone through something like that, you're just completely numb. Right. So I think that's the only way I got that job I was just numb. And so that rage was like, where's all this coming from? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you get blindsided. So that's where that came from. I mean, so it took me places, which I'm trying not to go right now because no one wants to see Big Daddy emotional. It took me places. Growing up, okay, having to go to church every day, you hear spare the rod, spoil the child. My mom never spoiled the child. And back there, you got whipped with an extension cord, you know, that thing you plug into the wall.
Yeah.
Well, that's like a whip. So when we got beat from the first one, I remember is, I think it was the first grade, 6 years old. Your back is bloody, just like ripped with welts. And so that happened to me up until age 17.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've come to, I realized something though. If I had only, now I hardly ever got into trouble, but when I did, I did. If I'd only done what I was supposed to do, it wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean? Now sometimes, you know, so it's like, do what you're supposed to do and you won't get this. But sometimes someone would do something, like someone would eat some food and my mom would say, who ate that? Now I didn't eat it, but usually she thought it was me, someone else did. So she goes, okay, I'm gonna get everybody.
Right.
it was that kind of pain. I mean, love my mom,
right.
Love my mom. She was, but then when I, at 26, I heard her story and I was like, wow. So sometimes you might be at odds with people. You got to hear their story.
Right.
And then you go, oh, so I vowed that would never happen to any of my kids. But when you go through that and through a lot of stuff, which I won't get into, I might write a book. All of a sudden, Big Daddy was perfect because the pain was so raw. It was just so raw that George would just let me go.
Yeah.
And there were times I would wander the street because we finished till like maybe 7 o'clock in the morning. And normally you can drop your work, but I couldn't drop my work at times, you know, everybody came to me, you know, they used to call me Big Daddy. Everybody would come to me if they had problems. And so I would knock on a friend's door, you know, female friend, and hi, how you doing? Okay. And I want to say, can I come in and get a hug? But I couldn't say that.
I couldn't.
Oh, just, you know, just in the neighborhood. Anyway, that's enough of that.
Yeah. No, I hear a lot of great actors. They dive into like roles and stuff. They dive into a personal, you know, and they let something come out from their past and it really it bleeds through the character that they're playing. So I hear a lot of that stuff. So,
I mean, I have a question to everybody. And that question is, what was the zombie moment in your life? What caused you to have to go through places, struggle, and how do you come out on the other side? And I think sports helped a lot because a lot of kids playing sports, like football for me was an outlet. As a teenager, sometimes you're very angry. So after 2 weeks of Hell Week where you're hitting each other in football, everything's fine, you know?
That's a good question. Gary, you want to go first?
I don't know. I mean, I've never thought about it.
That's a real good question.
It is a really good question.
I think a lot of people should sit back and, you know,
it's a way smarter question than I could ever think of.
I honestly think we're all living through it right now. To be honest with you, where, you know, the world as we know it has changed, and a lot of things are just different, and we're all being pushed way outside of our comfort zones and doing things we weren't necessarily ready to be doing, or, you know, being forced into career changes, job changes, lifestyle changes, everything else. I mean, I'd argue that this is that moment for a lot of people, whether they realize it or not.
Right.
Exactly.
I think obviously when you go through heartache and pain, whether it's a divorce or, cause I've been divorced for a while, but I had to come to grips with, my ex-wife, never got used to living here in the States, and she's a great person, but She's from Germany, and you know, traveling around, you know, you kind of miss places, and you know, and she missed her family and friends, and I had to say goodbye to not only her but my daughter. So that was definitely a zombie moment, and I kind of dove into alcohol and a bad relationship, which, you know, I believe in God, and if I didn't go through that, and thank God I was able to come out of it, but I also help other people, you know, and I think that was the main reason why I had to go through that. So that was kind of like my zombie moment, you know.
See, you hit it when you said and lost your child.
Yeah, yeah.
That happened to me.
Yeah.
And it's sad that the courts say leave the kids out of it.
Right.
But people don't do that.
Yeah.
For some reason they want to get you, so they poison the children's mind. There were a lot of articles. As a personal trainer, I would have clients send me articles, and there was an article of a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He had the $102,000 to have his kids deprogrammed.
Yeah.
So often people, you know, they deprogram the kids, leave, and a lot of people don't think that husbands love their kids dearly, and many of us, I mean, inside, innately, we are to lay down our lives for them. We should do whatever to take care of them. Right. And the love of a father is in my mind, it's at least close to being as deep as a mom. I mean, I remember my kids, I would think in my brain, I will stop that. If there's an 18-wheeler coming down the street, I will stop it with my body before it touches my child.
Right.
And so people don't get, you're traveling, working, I'm traveling, working. I mean, to me, it's almost like the hunter-gatherers.
Yeah.
And if there's a mother at home or a dad at home taking care of the kids, that's when you say to the children, you know, dad's out there providing for us. We generally die younger before they do. Like, in other words, let them know that we're not out there messing around. We're out there giving up our lives to help take care of them.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, as you know, when it's over, you're like, wow, you know what? I could have made other choices, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But you deal with it and you learn to forgive.
Right.
You learn to forgive and realize, you're like, I wasn't ready anyway, you know?
Right.
Anyway.
See, my biggest thing was, you know, my zombie part of my life. You know, my ex-wife was cool with, you know, like, oh, come over and see the child. And, you know, and I could have not let her go, but she would have been miserable. And she really missed her family and home. But it was that several thousand miles separation. And, you know, it's not like I could just jump on a plane and go there in a couple hours. You know, you're crossing the Atlantic and all that stuff. And so, like you said, when you're on the road, a lot of wrestlers, a lot of athletes, a lot of people that are away from home, they tend to go towards alcohol to try to suppress that. And, you know, and unfortunately, you know, sometimes we make bad decisions, but like you said, even when you're not, you know, and you're away, you know, it definitely does get to you. And like you said, you jump in front of a 18-wheeler, you know, to push your kid out of the way or try to stop it. You know, you definitely would, you know?
Right.
So in that father instinct, you look after other kids too, whether it's
definitely,
and you know, and because especially if you see someone with kids, you kind of, you know, have to be that role model for you know, kids, and you look after their safety too, you know, more than yours. So
you do. On the street by the crosswalk, you see the parent isn't paying attention, the kids walking by. I'm standing there, but I'm like, where's your mom?
Right.
And in my brain, I'm going, okay, I have to make a quick move. And they look at me and say, go to your mom, please. Go to your mom.
Right.
All the time, you know?
Right. Yeah, Gary. See, Gary's different. He pushes a kid out in the street. He's a
son. you guys got me feeling all bad that I'm excited that I'm an empty nester now.
Right. Once Gary's kids turned 18, he just showed them the door.
Got the boot.
You know, my brother-in-law, he said his father at 18 told him out. When his son turned 18, he told him out.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, Gary, you're tough, dude.
They moved on their own. I didn't miss them out, and I miss them every day.
Yeah, Gary tells me that he misses, you know, his kids running around, and yeah, being an empty nester isn't what it's cracked up to be.
you know, it's funny.
Call yourself.
Right.
That's another one. Yeah, call your dad. Call your mom. Okay, another question. Father's Day. Do the kids do the same things as Mom's Day? Or is it like quickly, oh, Dad, here's a card. Oh, hey, happy Father's Day.
Yeah. High five.
Exactly.
That's right.
I'm just happy with a phone call.
Well, I have a, yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
So, Gary, so, I know
all we, that. We, go ahead, Gary.
I was just saying,
I have a new movie coming up. Called, maybe a TV movie called Will You Marry Me? Mm-hmm. And interesting, there was a role I play, am I allowed to say what I play? Anyway, sure. I don't think I'm allowed. No, I don't think, yeah. I think I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. But the work, I was able to use some of the trauma for the work, just a touch. And they liked what I did and they offered me the part. And I'm finally at the point where I, like, there's a point where I couldn't even look at the pictures. I couldn't because it just broke my heart. And I'm at the point now where I see the younger pictures and smile. There's a young lady on a TV show called Black Lightning. It's on Netflix, and she looks a little bit like my daughter. So I watched the show just to watch her so I can, you know, and I'm smiling and going, yeah, that's just like how my daughter used to be. So I'm glad that I'm at the point now where I can look and not hurt.
Somebody said this is a very deep show. This is,
yeah, I really enjoyed it. You've been here to Gary, you've brought Big Daddy in, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, he's been a couple times. He's supposed to come this year, but unfortunately with the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, you know, guys, I'll tell you, I've turned down lots of these because I've done interviews and, you know, they ask the normal questions and it got to the point where I'm also a stand-up comedian and I have a show called This S Don't Stink. So I started incorporating in my panels, I started incorporating the comedy. Mm-hmm. And it took me about 10 years, but it took me like 13 years. The last couple of years, I was able to make it funny. So I talk about that situation and make it funny. And I got to the point where it's like, you know what? I don't want to just talk about frivolous stuff, but right. I want to be careful because I don't want people all modeling. So today I thought, what are you going to do, Eugene? I said, well, they need to know the understory of Big Daddy, why he was in so much pain. I mean, you know, how I was able to convey the pain. And it was not just that, though. It was really worldwide. It was that. Well, no, actually, what's interesting is I couldn't use the work from the breakup because it was so close. So the way we work, you can't use it because it's not 5 years back. But I had other breakups, like the one from university, other pain, and then the atrocities around the world. I would think about all the atrocities around the world, and I would think about how we only understand the pain that happens to us, whoever we are.
Right.
But I remember on doing a show at Yuck Yucks in Toronto once, and it was after the you know, the IRA and the, you know, the Catholic Protestants, the bomb thing. And I basically was saying to them that we're just crazy. And I said, you guys know what a Black Irish it is? That's not a Black person. I said, there, all over the world, there was like, you know, violence, civil war, stuff going on. And I said, it's not just Black on white, it's all over the world. And the one thing I did learn from my divorce is, I mean, I said yes to a lot of things, is that kind of strife, nothing good comes out of it.
Right.
Nothing good comes out of it. Right. You have to forgive. You have to forgive so that you can heal.
Right.
So I forgave. I just forgave stuff. And I could never stay mad at anybody more than 2 weeks anyway. I forget. All I remember is the good. Right. And that gets me into trouble because you want to reach out to people and they don't want to talk to you. It's like, man, right. I, you know, anyway, I better stop.
Well, no, you're on a great roll. But I also think, and it seems like, you know, you definitely have to forgive, you know, not necessarily forget, but in order to heal, like you said, and grow,
right.
And then you can help out others and give them the tools how to grow and how to forgive and, you know, and stuff like that. Cause if you don't forgive, and you're right, hatred has no boundaries or has no border. No. It's all over exactly. the world. Unfortunately, exactly. it's part of human nature. But also, you know, we need to see the good in people and things too. And we need to, you know, continue on doing good things. And a lot of people right. don't realize is, you know, we can only take on so much, because if you stretch that rubber band at both ends, it's going to snap, and we can't right. snap because we need to be strong for other people. So it's exactly. sometimes if you take a step back and be selfish in order to forgive, heal, this and that, it makes you strong right. and better. So.
But, and also, yeah. also, yes, and also, there are things that boys and girls go through, mm-hmm. and looking for love in all the wrong places. And it would be great if somehow it can be conveyed to them. Get a hobby, do whatever. Don't latch on to people. Right. A lot of guys and girls they latch on because they want to get out of the house, or you just can't be alone. Well. It's good to learn how to be alone with yourself while you're discovering maybe hobbies or other interests, because then you understand how to step away quicker.
Right.
I've
right.
always been loyal to a fault.
Right. I hear you.
And it's like, well, you know, there's a time when you just need to say, this isn't going to work. And sometimes you know it right away. So but when you come from a dysfunctional family, like I did, but love my brother, love my sister, but you know, it's just dysfunction. You learn how to compartmentalize stuff. But right. through the compartmentalization, that's not always good, but sometimes you do it to survive.
Right.
You know, so you're with people that this really isn't going to work. So right. I applaud people who can say, I gotta go now, you know.
Right. right. Gary always wants to step away from me, but I keep on
doing shower.
Right, Gary, do we have to get going? I know Dave.
Yeah, I just got the memo. We got it. We're going to have to cut it short. He's got more.
I could talk to you for another hour.
I told you, isn't he awesome? I love
you. The greatest. I can't wait till the Monroe Pop Fest, and you know, when you come in, I want to talk to you. You definitely need to write a book. If you can, tell everybody where they can find you at, if Instagram, social media, or anything.
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I think it's Eugenia Clark 7. I don't know. You'll see my face. Right. I'm hardly ever on social media, but I'm on Instagram too. I don't know. Eugenia Clark 2014. I have no idea, but I'm on Facebook. Well, you'll see my mug.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And, what?
We were watching Hallmark Channel not too long ago, and your face popped up there too.
Oh yeah, I'm in two movies there. Nostalgia Christmas, yep. that was last year. The year before yep. was A Christmas Next Door, and this Christmas movie I'm in is called Will You Marry Me?
Nice.
So start shooting yeah. next week.
Well, you know we love having you, and I can't wait to get you to Monroe again, because I need that scary bear hug you do. I'm just recovering from the last one, so
sounds good.
But thank you so much, Gene, for coming on, and I can't wait to get you back to Monroe, hang out,
well, thank you.
Talk, and we'll see you soon, all right?
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Be safe. My pleasure. Be safe and stay well.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, brother. So it was a fun, fun episode today.
Oh, and, very fun.
We're still on, so I just wanted to tell everybody, you know, Terry and Gary's Low Expectation Podcast. We're going to have it on YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and iTunes here coming up pretty soon. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Big Daddy.
Thank you.
Big Daddy.
I feel like I've grown as a person.
Oh, Eugene's great. I told you. I can't wait to get him to Monroe. He's such a fun person to be around. He's a singer, too. We didn't get to talk about his singing. He's got CDs out.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see some of his stand-up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he'll do a panel. We'll have him do a panel next time he comes down.
Right. For sure. Q&A.
All right. So we'll talk soon. I don't know if Dave got his off yet.
Podcast.
We might still be on here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Are we off? Are we still on?
No, you're still on.
All right. Well, we're live, so we're just
okay.
Dave's booting us off.
Yeah, like I said, this is literally the first day we've used this software, so I don't know what's going to happen when the other guys out on the remote try to take it over.
I like the software because I can watch comments pop up.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's one of the features I really like about this.
So yeah. I'm not against using the software next time. If it's,
yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like I said, this is literally just the first day we're using this. So,
well, we appreciate you, Dave. Thank you. And tune in next week.
Yeah, we'll see you guys.
Same bad time, same bad channel.
Right.
Bye.